I'm an addict named Cheryl. So I'm the replacement speaker. Somebody wasn't able to make it, and Autumn came back and asked me if I would. And like we came on a road trip up here, five of us in my new vehicle, and I was just coming to get some recovery. So when she asked me, and it was funny because somebody said something, and there was a smart-ass remark about leaving people and all sorts of stuff, and she asked, and I said yes, and then she told me the topic was gratitude, and I said, that is my least favorite topic in Narcotics Anonymous. So let me get this out of the way. This is why it's my least favorite topic. So if I give you the list of all of the things that have happened that I have as a result of recovery, then I sound like this materialistic money, property, and prestige person. If I tell you all about what I've gained emotionally, spiritually, mentally as a result, or I talk about the idea that gratitude is an action and I tell you all of the things that I do to show my gratitude, then I sound like a person who has absolutely no humility. So gratitude is like my least favorite topic because there's like really no way to talk about it and have humility. And sometimes I sit in meetings and I listen to people as they're saying stuff and I'm going, okay. So then I found out that I was speaking after Carla, so I asked Carla to sock. I said, Carla, you need to sock. Because Carla always carries a really great message, and it's like, oh my God, then I got to carry a message after Carla? That's a hard thing to do. She didn't sock. She was awesome. She carried a great message. It's like, I want to say, okay, I'm done. Go home. So then I was sitting there, and I thought, and she said something, and it made me think, you know, very simply, we have a saying that says, my gratitude speaks when I care and when I share with others the NA way. So all I'm going to do is share with you whatever that power that is not me decides needs to come out of my mouth. And I'm going to try to watch the time because I should do that. Because I like to think that when I get long-winded, it's because I've been divinely inspired. I like to think that, but then, you know, I was listening to Carla talk about that piece of ego, and it's like usually I get long-winded because my ego takes over. So I'm going to try to find some balance in that. And so, like, some crazy things going on in my head, and just, like, a little bit of what's been going on in my life, like, over the last month. So I got a call. God, I don't know, somewhere at the end of February from my mom in Florida that was one of those, get down here, we don't know if your dad is going to make it. So that's on a Thursday. We had just been out looking at cars the day or two before. And I get off the phone with my mom, and before I even get a chance to call my husband to say what's going on, he calls and he's all excited because the dealer called and they're offering us the deal we want. And I'm like, got the phone in my hand. I mean, it's like this. And I'm like, shut up. I don't know that I can do this. And he's on this roll about this great thing. And I'm like, I got to go to Florida. And I'm like, I don't know. So I get home. And at that point, I still didn't know, like, whether we were getting a car. All I knew was I had to book a flight. So one of those pieces of gratitude is the idea that I literally was able to go home and book a flight. Like, I didn't have to think, who am I going to beg, borrow, or steal from to book a flight. I just booked a flight. The cool thing, though, was a couple days later, I was sharing that with one of my sponsees who said, you know that no matter what, you would have been able to go home and book a flight. Because whether you had the ability to do that or not, the people around you would have made sure that happened. And that's really been my experience since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous. My experience has been that anything that I have needed since I got here, I have had the resources to make that happen. And sometimes those resources were mine and mine alone and from my hard work and all of the rest of that. And sometimes those resources were as a result of the people that I've managed to put in my life who have been able to say, this is your need and we're going to help you to do that. So I was able to be in Florida, and my father didn't pass, and I spent some time with my brothers, and I don't know what is going to happen other than that I know that the next time a call comes that says you have to be here, that I'm going to be able to do that. My daughter wants to see her grandfather, and that we're going to go over her spring break and do that. And that I'm able to be there for my family. And it was interesting. I was talking to my sponsor about this the other day. And to say that over the last 26 years I've had a strained relationship with my family is really putting it mildly. And I don't even know, I mean, like, it's also one of those things that I can't say, like, what's their part and what's my part and what is just that we are philosophically different creatures. But none of that matters. Like, whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to do because that's what I want to do for my family. And it has nothing to do anymore with what they did or didn't do for me. And that's a result of this program, that I can love people who were not always there for me in the way that I thought they should be, because I can love them and be there for them the way I think is right today. That no matter what happens, I can say that I was the best daughter that I could be. And to me, like, that's a miracle of this program, of working the steps and of getting out of self. So while all of this is going on, how many of you are on 27 NA Facebook pages like I am? Right? Uh-huh. They're back there. I know because I see them. So somebody posted something on a page the other day that I thought was kind of odd. And this is where, like, I discovered that my experience might be vastly different than other people's. Somebody posted something, and I don't know, remember exactly what it was, but it was the idea that somebody was going through something, they had put it out to their support group, whatever you want to call it, and did not, something about having expectations that those people were going to call them and that they didn't have to initiate the phone call. And my experience since I've been here is not that, like, I don't, you know, when I need help, I make phone calls. When something's going on, I have people that I can call. But the other thing is that I have some amazing people around me that sometimes my problem with asking for help isn't that I don't want to ask for help. It's that I don't even know the form in which that help should take. And because I don't know what to ask for, I can't even figure out who to call. But my experience has been that I have these amazing people around me that respond. So when I'm going through something, the people that I have in my life are there in ways that I couldn't even imagine asking for. So, example, quite a few years ago, my husband had quadruple bypass surgery. And at the time, my daughter was 7 years old. Now, like, standing here calm and serene, like, it would make sense that I would need to ask somebody to pick her up at school if I planned on being at the hospital. In the midst of everything that was going on, I couldn't always think about that. But I got phone calls from people that said, hey, Cheryl, it's so-and-so. I'll get Lynn Marie at school so that you don't have to leave the hospital. I have a driveway that is like this, and this was in January. And there was not a night that I came home. Now, I'm in the hospital all day, every day for way too many weeks. Sometimes I wouldn't even know that it had snowed. There was not a night that I came home that the driveway wasn't clear. And I'm pretty sure that it was tow truck drivers that did it. We had a series of tow truck drivers in our life at the time. I don't know which one. I probably never will. The idea that you have to eat, right? Eating is important, right? I wasn't in a position to remember things like I had to make my daughter a lunch to take to school. Every night I would come home and there would be food for dinner and something to pack in her lunch on the doorstep. And so it was odd because I was sharing this experience on this Facebook page, and some people responded that, like, they were really great, glad that that was my experience, but that wasn't theirs. And I thought for a minute, I can't imagine, because that's been my experience in Narcotics Anonymous since day one. Since early on here, I have had the fortune to surround myself with people who loved me when I couldn't love myself, who were willing to help me in whatever way necessary, even if I didn't know what that was. I had a little over a year clean, and I was taken to the emergency room and diagnosed with exhaustion and malnutrition. And for the year following that, some of the women that my sponsor sponsored called me every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, to make sure that I ate. Like, who does that? We do that. Now, when I think about, I'll say, the quality, which sounds crazy, the quality of the people in my life. So the people in my life are ex-cons, whores, junkies, people who never held a job, people who have been disowned by their families, all right? And probably I could add some other. Those are the people in my life. And I'm going to tell you about the quality of the people in my life. Right? Doesn't that sound crazy? At one point, when my father first got sick and some stuff was going on, to think when I got clean, we didn't even have cell phones. And when you called your sponsor, you may or may not have gotten the answering machine, which when they listened to the message may have sounded like, "Hi, Regina, this is Cheryl. I'm just calling to check in." Or it might have sounded like, and your sponsor didn't call you back because they never knew you called because the tape was full. And now I'm reaching out via Facebook. So when I said to my mom that if I flew into Fort Lauderdale, which is an hour from them, this was the way I put it, I have a friend of a friend that's willing to come pick me up. Now, to tell you the truth, I don't even remember the name of this friend of a friend. And I say that because she has one name on her Facebook page that's not really her name. And so when she private messaged me to say, "Yeah, if you need a ride, I can get you," it was another name. And so I'm not really sure if I fly into Fort Lauderdale and she picks me up, what the hell her name is. But I'm going to guarantee, because my experience in Narcotics Anonymous tells me, that if I send her the message that says, "Pick me up in Fort Lauderdale at this time," guess what? Some lady whose name I'm not sure of and I've never seen before is going to be there. Because that's been my experience here. The other side to why I believe I believe that's been my experience because that was what was given to me. And then I gave that to others in return. And that they give that to somebody else. And then that person gives it to somebody else. And somewhere around the cycle, it gets to come back to me again. You never know. When I carry a message, or when you carry a message, or when the message is carried, we never know who really needs that message and where it comes around to. So I'm going to share this last little story, and then I'm going to shut up. Years ago, I sponsored a woman who was, number one, old enough to be my mother. Number two, had been around 12-step recovery longer than I had been alive. And I had the honor and the privilege and pleasure of sponsoring her. And she passed away, and she passed away clean. Year or two after she passed away, and she was from Uniontown. So anybody knows where Uniontown is? South of Pittsburgh, kind of. So about a year after she passed away, I'm in a meeting in Homestead. And this woman is telling the story. And the story is about the work that we have to do, that, yes, it's great to rely on a higher power, but you have to do the work. And this was the story that was told. And you know how we tell stories in here. We never attribute the story to anybody. So it's that vague, either my sponsor said, without naming the sponsor, or I heard at a meeting. So I'm listening to this woman tell this story that her sponsor had told her, that said something about, so, you know, I was sitting talking to my sponsor one day, and she was tired of me telling the same story, having the same issue over and over and over again. And so, you know, the sponsee says, but I've turned it over to my higher power, and my higher power is going to help me get through this. And the sponsor's trying to make some suggestions on, like, some steps to take, you know, like maybe work a step, maybe do something a little different, maybe show some motivation. And the sponsee is talking about, oh, no, my God's great, and he's going to take care of it, and blah, blah, blah. And so the sponsor says, would you like a cup of coffee? And the sponsee says, yeah, a cup of coffee would be great. And the sponsor said, okay, pray and see how long it takes your higher power to get it to you from the kitchen. It's there. Your higher power made sure the coffee was in it. It's ready. It's in the kitchen, but you've got to do some work to get it. And so this woman's telling this story, and that was my old sponsee story that it was a story that she had told a sponsee that she had before I was even clean, because she had been clean before. And we tell our stories, and we never know whether the person that really needs to hear that is sitting in the room at the moment, or whether somebody who's sitting in the room is later going to tell the story to somebody else who's going to tell the story. And it's like five times later that the message of that story gets to the ears of the person it was meant for. And I guess part of what I'm grateful for is that I've almost always been willing to keep my ears open to hear the message and to use my voice to carry it when asked. That's it. Thank you.